Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
A group of protesters turned mob turns their attention on the Capitol. Overwhelmed security forces scramble to keep lawmakers safe. A Republican stands accused of aiding an attempted siege of the Capitol.
God bless the Patriots!
Arrests are made, investigations follow, charges are filed, and questions remain.
Each and every one of you, they're trying to tell us this is an unlawful assembly. It is not.
This may all sound familiar to you, and it should, but this isn't a story about what happened in Washington, D.C. on January 6th, 2021.
USA! USA! USA!
This is about what happened in Salem, Oregon, 16 days before.
This is the Oregon State Police. All subjects must leave the Capitol grounds, or you will be subject to arrest under Oregon Revised Statute.
I'm Ian Costello. It's Tuesday, May 18th, and this is Beyond the Headlines on the Coin Podcast Network.
I, Representative Nierman, voluntarily agree to the following interim safety measures. I will not allow any non-authorized personnel into the Capitol.
Dan Tilken covers the Oregon State Capitol for Coin 6 News. Dan, we're going to get into everything that happened here in a bit, but before December 21st, 2020, what did we know about Representative Mike Nierman?
So Mike Nierman, a little known Republican lawmaker from the Willamette Valley, officially from Independence, though he doesn't live in the town of Independence, not a big player, but he made headlines last summer when he proposed that the federal courthouse in downtown Portland be moved to the town of Dallas, Oregon. And the reason for that was because of all the violence and protests in downtown Portland. And he said, hey, if you move it to Dallas, Oregon, it'll get away from Antifa and anarchists and the people protesting and causing the violence downtown. And let's move it to Dallas, Oregon and get it away from this violence. That's where he became somewhat of a player in the headlines.
And why was he supposed to be in court last Tuesday?
So Mike Nierman was supposed to be in court last Tuesday to answer the two criminal charges against him for allowing those people into the state Capitol building on December 21st.
So what happened exactly on December 21st, 2020 at the Oregon State Capitol?
So on December 21st, this is right before Christmas, obviously, and the lawmakers are meeting, talking about how to handle COVID and the pandemic and how to make laws and who can be there and who can't be there. And at this point, nobody besides the lawmakers and staff are allowed in the state legislature. The building is closed to the public, and that has made right-wing people, supporters of former President Donald Trump, who was the president at the time, very upset. This group of people claiming that this is the people's house. You can't pass laws. You can't hold meetings about bills and laws without the public there. A Democratic majority saying, we can do this through Zoom. We can do this through video conferencing. Actually, this will make it better for the public because instead of having to drive from the four corners of Oregon to Salem to be in a committee meeting, you can actually sit at home in your pajamas and watch a meeting and chime in and give testimony. So there was this battle over of who could be in the building and who could not. So these right-wing group of people who were very upset about not being allowed in the building gathered outside the Oregon Capitol on December 21st, demanding to be let in.
They're trying to tell us this is an unlawful assembly. It is not.
A lot of flag waving, a lot of chanting, a lot of angry people saying their rights were being trampled on and it was un-American and that they should be allowed in. So there's a heavy police presence in and around the building. They're not allowed in. The doors are sealed. Well, at one point, Representative Mike Nierman leaves the floor of the House of Representatives, which was in session, and he doesn't go out the front door. He goes out a side door on the west end of the Capitol building, and he just leaves through the building and allows two protesters in. At that point, there was not a large group outside those doors. They were around the corner. So he opens the door. These two men rush past him. He doesn't even seem to acknowledge their presence. And as they blow past him, he just continues walking out the door.
you've done quite a bit of reporting on this since December 21st, and we know from putting pieces together after the fact that there's this huge crowd gathered outside. They were getting louder. They were getting a little bit pushier. You've also done some reporting about what was going on inside the Capitol in those moments. Do we have any indication as to what lawmakers may or may not have known about what was going on outside?
It's a pretty interesting aspect of this, because in my mind, when I was putting this together, I'm thinking these lawmakers are on the floor of the House and they are very concerned about what is going on, this mob outside that wants to get in and get to them. And so I'm just trying to put myself in their shoes. If I'm on the floor of the House, I've got to be thinking in the back of my mind about my security. So what I did is I pulled the video. There are cameras in several places inside the House of Representatives and the Senate, and so that people can watch the hearings. There are also archives. So I went through the archives trying to find out what was the level of tension in there, the level of concern for their safety. I found the video of that session and I watched it, and it was remarkable to me the lack of concern for safety. From my memory, the only thing I could find was one of the lawmakers got up in front and was making a presentation, and in the presentation said something to the effect of, and as we know, some of our friends are outside and they would like to come in here and let us know what they think. And that was all that I remember, the only acknowledgement of what was happening outside, this chaos that is starting to build outside. It really didn't seem to affect those people inside.
So, for the most part, it's business as usual inside the chambers, but we now know that we see that on video, Representative Nierman is seen walking out a side door and two people getting past him. From that point, Dan, can you give me a blow-by-blow of the next 2 hours?
So Nierman walks by these two men. They come in and they wave for other people to come join them, come join them, come join them. But there's not a lot of people out there to wave to because they're around the corner. And eventually, more people get their signal and they join them, and then more people, and then more people. And so there's this, not a large group of people, a handful of people that are inside the doorway on this side entrance. It's a small little area. And then suddenly, police officers come in and they rush these people and they push them, they shove them outside the building. But the door is open. And so the officers push them outside the doorway. By this point, there's a huge crowd that has gathered there. And the officers who are dressed in riot gear are standing, I don't know, 5 to 10 feet outside the building and kind of made this human wall to try to keep people out. They try to then close the door and make that's the perimeter. You get the door closed, problem over. Building's made of stone. It's a fortress. What can they possibly do? As a police officer's trying to close the door, somebody, one of the protesters, demonstrators, rioters, unleashes what we believe is bear spray. It certainly was pepper spray or mace, some sort of spray on the officer. And the officer kind of bails out of the way and he lets go of the door and he can't get the door closed any longer and gives up trying to get the door closed. They withdraw several feet back into the building. And then another person with a flag standing to the left side of the door smacks one of the officers standing in the doorway with the flag. What has always surprised me is why the police didn't make their stand there, why they didn't unleash their own pepper spray, bear spray, rubber bullets, nightsticks, whatever they had at their disposal to repel the crowd there and get that door shut. I don't know why. I've requested the after action market report by OSP that would presumably explore why they did what they did and when they did what they did it. I've been just denied that request, saying that the criminal investigation into Nierman is continuing, and until that is over, all reports are not releasable. So what happens is police officers withdraw further into the building. Well, the people outside, the protesters, you almost wonder, I'm just trying to put myself in their place. It looks to me like they're thinking, is this a Trojan horse? Like they want us to come in here? So they apprehensively set foot into the building. And then some of them look around, they turn around, they leave. And then some others come in and they look around and then they leave. After a while, they get enough gumption or whatever it is, where they fill this small area. Well, then you kind of have this play out again where there's another set of doors into a larger foyer, larger area, and kind of the same thing plays out. Some guys wait in, they leave, they go in, they leave. Eventually they get enough courage and they go into this larger foyer. And what is in there are two large glass doors. And those doors, you get those doors open, now you're into the House of Representatives, the state capitol proper. Well, behind those glass doors are what appear to be very large, very well-armed police officers in riot gear. They look like a formidable force. Eventually, enough of these protesters, demonstrators, rioters, or whatever you want to call them, they fill that room and they're standing shoulder to shoulder, 10 people, 15 people, maybe even 20 people deep. I'd have to go back and count. And a lot of them are dressed in military gear, helmets, flak jackets, things that you could buy at Army Navy for surplus store. And they are pretty angry that they can't get inside. And then they start singing the national anthem. And it's kind of a moment where you think, all right, something's going to happen. They believe that they're patriots, that they're all here for greater good. And the climax is they're singing the national anthem. So you've got to think, all right, after they sing that, they either have to leave or they've got to step it up. And what happens is it gets stepped up. After they sing the national anthem, one of them who's in the front there, he just starts pulling on the doors, trying to get them open. And to his left is a familiar face, Joey Gibson, who is the leader of the Patriot Prayer far-right group. And he's got a bullhorn, and he is yelling things. And the crowd is really fervent. And the person pulling on the door, pulling on the door, pulling on the door, the door comes open. And then there's this pause. I call it a beat, where nothing happens. It's only a fraction of a second, maybe two, where nothing happens. And you are in your mind, you're saying, why isn't anybody doing anything? Why aren't these guys rushing in? Why aren't the police rushing out? Why aren't the police shooting them with rubber bullets? Why aren't they using pepper spray? And that beat, as fast as it happens, it goes away, and suddenly this cloud of what I presume is mace, pepper spray, bear spray, something, just gets unleashed on the crowd. And the camera person, the stringer, the freelancer who's down there, who provided us with the video, he just ducks because this cloud of gas is coming out of him. And it just, the chaos is, the camera goes to the ground. People start running. The camera turns off. That is the end of this standoff. Police get control of the building again. They push these protesters out, and the police regain control over the Oregon Capitol.
That's what they're doing now. We go in there, demand our constitutional rights, and we get maced. They're macing.
When you first were hearing reports of what had happened, did the oral history or the written history of what we thought happened on December 21st, did that match the video, or do people really need to understand what that video shows to understand how violent things actually were?
You know, we're in such an interesting time now, whether it's George Floyd or whether it's what happened at the U.S. Capitol or the Salem Capitol. You used to read these accounts of things that happened, and they're up to interpretation. Well, now you have the video, and the video doesn't leave much up to the imagination.
USA! 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 This is hold up! Hold up!
When we come back, Dan takes us inside the case against Representative Mike Nierman.
The Coin 6 Weather Team has the most accurate forecast in town, certified by WeatherRate. Coin 6 Weather, watching out for you.
Hello, Coin6 News anchor Emily Burris here. We know your mornings are busy, and we want to help you be in the know as you head out the door. That's why the Coin Podcast Network is bringing you a brand new podcast called The Daily Six. Every weekday, we'll bring you the day's six biggest headlines in a quick and concise report, on demand and on your schedule. So check out the Coin Podcast Network on coin.com or have the Daily Six sent directly to you each day by subscribing to the Coin Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW, a full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family. See why more people are switching to Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW.
Okay, Dan, we've been through the timeline of those tense couple of hours inside the Oregon State Capitol on December 21st, 2020. What have you been able to piece together when it comes to what Representative Mike Nierman did after opening the side door that two of the protesters came through?
The question that lingered after all of this is, was Nierman just oblivious to what he allowed to happen? Or was he complicit? Did he do this on purpose to allow people into the building? Because he was one of the louder voices about, this is the people's house. The people need to be allowed in. COVID should not stop the people being involved in the lawmaking process. And he opens the door so nonchalantly and doesn't appear to communicate with these people. He just says like he's leaving. And then they just happen to be there and they go in. And the reaction from his supporters and people that sympathize with him is pretty overwhelmingly on social media. Oh, he was just leaving and they just happened to be there and he didn't know. So I aim to try to answer this question. So I went back to the people who have the video, the surveillance video, and I said, hey, we need the rest of the video for the around the Capitol where Nierman went. I had to be very patient with them and a little bit persistent and asked them like, hey, when you get a chance, can you try to find the video of where Nierman went? So some time went by and they were finally able to get to it. And I guess it was very difficult trying to isolate which cameras to look at. Some of the cameras, it's a real bird's eye view. So trying to figure out, is Nierman in that crowd? Is he not in that crowd? So eventually they produced the video showing where Nierman went. And it shows that he goes right into the heart of the crowd gathered on the steps of the Capitol. And he speaks to the people there. In my mind, it's pretty obvious he knows these people are here because they're surrounding him. There was a flood of people that went past him. So for him to not understand that by opening the door, this crowd of people would take up that space, to me, if it was me, it would be very naive of me to not realize what I had just caused. Then it shows him after engaging with these folks, he leaves the Capitol and he goes out of frame. Well, then the video reveals that 4 minutes and 36 seconds after he opens the door, he comes around the back side of the Capitol and he's all by himself. And you can see a police car racing past him with lights on because of the chaos that's going on. And he casually walks up the back steps of the Capitol, casually removes his security card to get in the building. He swipes it and he walks into the building where inside, his colleagues have been in session ever since. So he, for some reason, left the building for 4 minutes and 36 seconds and then came back through a different entrance. And nobody knows what was in his mind, but obviously investigators think that he either knew what he was doing or should have known what he was doing.
So in the days after we obtained that video that shows him outside the building, and then you combine that with the airing of the video that shows him opening the door, what happened?
Oregon State Police, which provides security for the Capitol, they were the ones investigating. Time went on and nothing had happened. We got a small update from Tina Kotek saying that they were investigating, that the case was going to be referred or was referred to the district attorney's office. More time went on. I got confirmation from the Marion County District Attorney's Office that they decided that OSP hadn't answered all the investigative questions that they wanted answered, so they sent it back to OSP for further investigation, which, of course, they did. And then a number of months go by, and then suddenly we realize that the charging documents showed up in the Oregon court system that Nearman had been charged with these two counts. And then shortly after that, a press release came out saying, yes, we have charged him with these two crimes.
So it took a while. But eventually, Nearman is charged with official misconduct and trespassing, which brings us back to a scheduled court appearance Tuesday, May 11th. Dan, what do we know about what happened in court?
So he was supposed to appear in court. And as we know, with COVID, you can either do it in person or you can do it through video. But he did not appear in court. We can't say for certain why he didn't appear and only his lawyer did, which in some cases, you can have a lawyer appear on your behalf when you don't have to show up. We do know that he went on the Lars Larson radio show prior, and everyone knows Lars Larson is a conservative talk radio host in Portland, and he told Lars that he's suffering from COVID, and he has the coronavirus, and from what I understand, a pretty bad case of it. So that would make sense why he would not be there.
There seem to be some ironic things about this story. He appears to aid the protesters by letting them in while the legislature was discussing COVID restrictions and COVID relief. And then he winds up getting COVID, which I find to be somewhat ironic. And then the second one is, this is the guy, as you mentioned off the top, Representative Nearman wanted the federal courthouse moved out of Portland because of violence. And then he allegedly plays a role in bringing violence to the Oregon State Capitol.
I think the irony meter is pretty high on this one. People talk about it all the time that he says one thing and then he has actions which seem to contradict the other. He has made statements saying that he hoped that people don't rush to judge him, that he should have his day in court and that type of thing. You know, we just did a story with the people on the day he had his court hearing, his supporters saying, well, it looked to me that he was just trying to open the Capitol to the people and nothing more than that. And in this polarized time we live in, people are going to see this often through their preconceived notions. I believe X, so therefore I'm going to view it through this prism and believe Y.
Where does it go from here? When is he due back in court? And do we expect to see any punishments handed down to Representative Nearman from the Oregon State Legislature?
So he's due back in court June 29th. It says he can be in person or remotely, according to his court documents. Interesting thing, his lawyer has already succeeded and moved to have two judges in Marion County disqualified from hearing the case. In the court paperwork, it doesn't say why, just that he has reason to believe that they would be prejudiced against his client. The case has been assigned to a judge. It's not either one of those two people, so it seems to be a moot point. He is also being investigated by an ethics board within the legislature, and so who knows what could happen with that. The official Oregon Government Ethics Commission has not been asked to investigate. We just checked with them. Could be fascinating to see how this process goes. Very often, a civil situation like an ethics board would wait to see what the criminal case, how that portrays, how that concludes before they take their action. Usually, the civil waits for the criminal, usually not vice versa. So I wouldn't be surprised if this Nearman situation drags out for quite a while. We do know that the Speaker of the House, Tina Kotek, removed him from his committees, made him, and he agreed to a whole bunch of stipulations, safety stipulations about when he could be in the building, who he had to notify, who he could bring into the building, who he couldn't bring in the building. Then he had to read that in open floor on the House of Representatives.
It could be reported to the Legislative Equity Office and could lead to additional action. I understand this is voluntary agreement and does not preclude the Legislative Equity Office, Employee Services, the House Committee on Conduct, or the House of Representatives from further action at any point.
Interesting because he's been compliant when it comes to that, but he's been defiant in other statements he's made.
Knowing what you knew when you read about what happened, did the level of violence you saw on that video surprise you?
We are in such strange times now that everything surprises me and nothing surprises me. I have covered left-wing protests in Portland for 20 years now. I once, during the Iraq War, had a crowd of 2,000 people chanting my name, Dan Tilken Sucks, because I had reported on them breaking windows at the McDonald's and ripping down American flags at the Toyota dealership on Broadway in Portland. And it was a very scary moment. I have seen windows smashed. I have seen police cars set on fire. I've seen the Target smashed downtown and flares thrown in trying to set the building on fire. Then, of course, this last summer, all the violence that has happened, which I wasn't surprised the first night it happened with the rioting with George Floyd after seeing so much pent-up anger in this country. I was so surprised that it's gone on night after night after night after night. And that's on the left wing. On the right wing, it took longer. We still have the same radical thought processes that violence is okay to achieve your means and that we are right and you are wrong.
If you remove the words Salem, Oregon from what happened, protesters gather outside. They turn into a mob. That mob moves on the Capitol building. Eventually, that mob gets inside and does battle with police officers. Accusations that they may have had inside help, all of that stuff aside, how eerily similar is what happened in Salem on December 21st to what happened in Washington, D.C. on January 6th?
Well, it's fascinating to look at the two situations. I've heard some people say, well, this was a precursor to what happened on January 6th, the U.S. Capitol. And remember, some of the people that were at the Salem situation then went to D.C. and were part of that. Mob mentality is fascinating. When you look at the anarchists and Antifa and what they've done in downtown Portland, and then you look at these groups on so the left wing and the right wing, there's a lot of thought that these are basically the same people that are so far flung ideologically, so far left and so far right that they come around and meet on the other side, that you just get so entrenched with your ideology that you can't see anything else. And it's something in your character that makes you, maybe you're looking to belong to something and you're looking for camaraderie. And then depending on who you come across in your life, and then you latch onto that person, and then you end up becoming part of this group that you maybe never intended to become that extreme. It's fascinating because a lot of these people in Salem were very upset with what's been happening in downtown Portland. Then you've got a lot of hypocrisy there, and it goes both ways. It goes both ways. Most Americans are centrist, are in the middle, and they want the same things. They want, you know, a good job. They want good health care. They want their family to be safe. They want a strong defense. They care about the environment. Most people really care about the same things. They might have just a slightly different way of getting at it. But then you've got these fringe groups that are just gaining more and more traction through social media. And, you know, as the press, we used to not give them much time. And now they've made inroads into mainstream leadership and institutions. And so now what we used to ignore, the fringe we used to ignore and not give them a voice, can't be ignored any longer.
Dan Tilken, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That will do it for us today. Thank you for listening to the COIN Podcast Network. We will talk to you soon.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from COIN6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch COIN6 News at 10 on Portland CW. It's our award-winning newscast, 1 hour earlier at 10 o'clock. A full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family from the news team that's watching out for you. Plus, Portland's most accurate forecast certified by WeatherRate from Chief Meteorologist Natasha Stenbach. See why more people are switching to COIN6 News at 10 on Portland CW. Watching out for you.